This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. The last time Dr. Vagiv Sultanov was on the show with me, we talked about gastrointestinal problems in women. Now, we're continuing that discussion today by exploring all the different ways in which H. pylori may be wreaking havoc within our bodies. And it's wonderful to have you back once again, Dr. Vagiv. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thank you very much.
You know, what brought you back to Malaysia? It's been, what, more than a year, I think, since
I missed you a lot.
I remember interrogating you about pine leaves and how you've come up with a sort of a supplement to help with H. pylori. But just before we go into that, you know, what's brought you back to Malaysia?
It's brought back to Malaysia, my relationship with Malaysia. And also, in Malaysia, we have our associate, our partners, which is helping to Malaysians to be familiar with our product under the name is Novapine, but mainly everything in related to Russian origin, Russian roots, where Forest Biochemistry started, and where first product which was isolated from pine and fir needles, mm-hmm. by Professor Solotki, called chlorophyll keratin paste.
Yep.
And after that, we find it has phenomenal medicinal properties, healing properties, and nourishing properties.
Mm-hmm. Pine and fir needles, who would have thought? No? It's how long has it been since the product has been commercialized?
And in 1930, Forest Biochemistry started back in Leningrad, St. Petersburg, and first product, chlorophyll keratin paste, derived to the front when Leningrad was in siege for 900 days, mm-hmm. in form of paste for treatment of burns, frostbites, cuts, wounds. At the same time, city was under siege for a long time, severe winter, lack of vitamins, lack of products at all, 75 grams of bread and glass of pine extract, mm-hmm. and bread had sawdust in fermented form, which provides sufficient amount of so-called carbohydrates, and also a little bit chlorophyll keratin paste in it.
Right.
And city survived and no scurvy.
Wow. Sawdust and bread.
Yes.
Wow.
And a
pine,
yes.
And a pine needle paste. That's really, really interesting. You are both a gastroenterologist. You're also a national therapies practitioner. Now, were you not at conflict within yourself when it came to exploring natural therapies? Such as this one that
you've
worked
on. And from my
point
of view, in the beginning, when you are changing your philosophical concept, it's a conflict. Because you trained one way, and after that you developed your own philosophical concept, you are trying to do it a different way. Of course, it's a conflict. But from other side, everything depends on your personal view, interest, and possibility to do your job properly. If you are doing it properly, it doesn't matter if you are a naturopath, mm-hmm. and or you are a conventional medicine specialist. Main issue is here, it's biggest mistake to try to antagonize these two directions. They must work together.
Right. You practice in Melbourne. Was it difficult? What prompted that shift from being a gastroenterologist to a natural practitioner?
Well, it's a very long story because my life and my education is very complex. I came to Australia like a scientist, a chemist, organic and biochemist. It was intergovernment exchange between former Soviet Union and Australia, and was invited like a scientist to work in CSIRO, one of the most big research organization of Australia, mm-hmm. and at this stage my research was dedicated mainly to oxidation and antioxidation, and it's a way how I came to Australia to work for 3 months, and after that they asked me to stay another 4 months, and after that I came back. I was invited to open clinic, and I opened the alternative medicine clinic, mm-hmm. and founded this clinic. I planned to be there for 4 months, and Soviet Union fell apart. I couldn't get visa back. I got stuck in Australia for 23 years.
Any regrets?
Maybe one regret, I don't have opportunity to see you often because you're in Malaysia.
I was talking about Russia and how it broke to pieces. Have you been home since, you know, coming to Australia?
I've been last year in May. I got invitation from head gastroenterologist of Moscow and St. Petersburg and director of Pasteur Institute to participate gastroenterology conference in relation to H. pylori.
Okay.
And because I've done a little bit work with our product in this area, and also because director of Pasteur Institute personally supervised pretty complicated trials in this area, they invited me to do presentation there, especially dedicated to H. pylori, and Barry Marshall was there, the Nobel Prize winner, and they wanted for us to have quality of time. It was the reason I went back to Leningrad.
Right. Tell me about Barry Marshall. Can you just tell me a little bit more about him?
And from my point of view, Barry Marshall and Warren, it's two great scientists, two Australians. And I had a chance to meet with him before that. I had a chance to communicate to him over the phone once or twice. But this real opportunity when we can come together and discuss something in relation to one of the most unusual topic in real terms, he is a person with his colleague who defines the H. pylori. Mm-hmm. He is a person who proved the reason for peptic ulcer or gastric ulcer, it's H. pylori.
Okay.
And he's a person who tried to publish his first article on a basis of trials on 13 people, and he was rejected, and later he got a Nobel Prize for exactly the same work. And he's a person who infected himself to prove real effect, so-called negative effect of H. pylori on the human gastric area. And for me, it was very fascinated area because in real terms, Helicobacter pylori first time was isolated like a class in 1989 only. And before that, we knew about this type of bacteria, but wrong definition of the bacteria was under umbrella of Campylobacter. Only since Barry Marshall stepped in, we got right definition for this bacteria, and today we have at least 32 different strains of Helicobacter.
32 different strains.
At least.
Yep.
Americans announced just 2 years ago about 150 now.
Wow. Okay. So it's a bacteria that sits in our stomachs. Is that what it is? Could you just go through with us what H. pylori really is?
H. pylori, it's really very unusual bacteria with tentacles, and it's bacteria lives in one of the most difficult environment in the stomach area where it's high acidity, and it has capacity only not to be attached to mucous lining. It has capacity to go even deeper, and when environment changes, they have capacity using their tentacles to penetrate further. Each penetration further create erosion on the mucous lining, which leads to different type of changes on mucous lining. Mm-hmm. As a result, it create gastritis. Gastritis can create ulcer, chronic gastritis. Ulcerative gastritis moves towards atrophic gastritis. And usually, we have a lot of scientific evidence. Between 15 to 20 years, atrophic gastritis turns to cancer of the stomach.
Do we all have H. pylori, or do we pick it up from someplace?
But according to latest statistical data, 60% of planet Earth has H. pylori. I believe mysterious part of H. pylori, you can't find H. pylori sitting on a bench or somewhere else.
It needs the acidic environment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it needs pretty obvious acidic environment. And I believe it has very unusual way of surviving. And also it usually transmits, or you can pass this usually through from person to, it's a oral fecal main way how you can transfer this bacteria. Mm-hmm. And it means, even when I spoke to Barry Marshall, he said, if hygiene will be on the highest level and people will be conscious, maybe we will avoid to have right environment for H. pylori.
Right. So if I share
but
a spoon...
But to tell H. pylori doesn't exist at all in the body, it's a biggest question mark.
Okay, all right. So would you say then if I share a spoon with a friend while I'm eating, or I share a cup... can H. pylori transmit, or can it pass from one person to the other?
I personally believe it's one of the most obvious way to transfer H. pylori, and it's a reason today we are looking to kids under age 5. Lot of them infected with H. pylori, but it's happening. Mom, for example, cooks something, takes something he puts in her mouth, after that use the same spoon, mm-hmm. and gives the same thing to child. It's a big variety to...
It's hard to control, to isn't it?
It's very common. It's very difficult to control because you must be very conscious about something which sometimes you don't feel because it's not manifested yet.
That's right. What idiopathic disorders may in fact be connected to H. pylori infection?
It's a biggest question. I will tell you, today very well established for people, women especially, who has migraines, headaches, usually in their organism we are finding more H. pylori than in people who doesn't have this manifestation. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same situation with pregnant women with morning sickness. They have higher amount of H. pylori in their system.
Okay.
And H. pylori today sits not only in the stomach. We have very interesting evidence about spreading H. pylori to other areas and other organs, especially to the liver.
Okay, we'll find out more. But are you saying Kate Middleton, for an example, has a whole lot of H. pylori because she suffered from something called hyperemesis gravidarum, which
yes.
is a severe form of morning sickness.
Yes.
is it necessary?
In a very, very simple form, morning sickness.
Yeah.
Thank God it's afternoon.
Does it necessarily have to do with H. pylori?
It's not necessarily to do with H. pylori. I personally believe it to do with general toxicity of the body, to certain degree dysfunction condition of liver and accumulation of toxins, changes in endocrine system, and changes in some metabolism.
Okay, then I must have had a... don't hormones play a role in that, especially when you're pregnant?
I personally believe, because I'm dealing a lot with morning sicknesses through my clinic, I personally believe if you are improving overall environment of gastrointestinal area, if you are adjusting a diet, morning sickness becoming not significant or disappears at all.
Okay. When we come back, we'll find out more about H. pylori and its effects on the body. If you have a question for Dr. Vagif Sultanov, do send me a text message. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. We're discussing Helicobacter pylori, or what we know as H. pylori, and its effect on the body with Dr. Vagif Sultanov. He's a gastroenterologist and natural therapist practitioner. You know, Dr. Vagif, earlier on you mentioned something about the link between H. pylori and the liver. How did you find that connection?
Define what?
The connection between H. pylori and the liver. We always talk about H. pylori in relation to the stomach.
It's the latest scientific data which shows we have variety of H. pylori which lives in liver. And already for H. pylori to be in a liver, effect of penetration this bacteria to the liver mm-hmm. could be pretty significant because liver, it's a pretty big organ, and a space or thickness of the liver very high, and penetration of the Helicobacteria to the liver in deeper level can create many unpredictable outcomes.
Okay, so liver is one area. Any other areas where you found it to be present?
But today, science talks about having H. pylori even in small intestine. But I personally don't have at this stage hard evidence. And when I don't have hard evidence, I don't have hard feeling to talk about this type of things. But definitely, American scientists announced about 150 strains already. Mm-hmm. It means we need to look at it in a wider spectrum of action and application.
Okay. What about in terms of treatment options or managing H. pylori? For an example, earlier on you spoke about how women have migraines and things like that, and that could be linked to H. pylori. I mean, are there natural therapies that we can adopt or take on board to help prevent these migraines?
But natural therapy treatment, of course, one of the most important part of natural therapies, it's balanced nutrition. We still underestimating what we are eating, how we are eating, and how we are mixing things. We are forgetting about function of each organ in the body, stomach, pancreas, liver, gallbladder, how we are producing gastric juices or bile to deal with different class of substances which goes to our system. It could be protein, it could be carbohydrate, and mixing everything together and try to body to digest everything and to create right nourishment without creating so-called bi-toxic products, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And accumulation of the toxic products usually puts a lot of pressure on the liver and kidneys, and overall blood becoming toxic and create deficiency on oxygen in the right places, create headaches, create as a discomfort condition in the body. And one of the most important natural therapeutic, I personally believe, remedy, it's our bioeffective A, or precursors of bioeffective A is chlorophyll carotene paste, which I mentioned before, derived from pine and spruce needles.
Right. It's a chlorophyll paste. Antibiotics is what most mainstream medical practitioners would, would is a solution or a treatment option for H. pylori. Now, are you torn between the chlorophyll paste and antibiotics, and which really works better?
My major problem, and I think biggest problem, is I definitely have some conflict. I believe in 90% cases of problems, you can avoid antibiotics. And so-called chlorophyll carotene paste, or CGNC, or bioeffective finished form, it's one of the most interesting complex, which has up to 800 different type of components. Some of them, it's fatty and resin acids. They have phenomenal antibacterial properties. And we have terpenes, which have phenomenal antifungal properties. And what's the point to take antibiotic if you can take this type of substance, which has chlorophyll, has carotenoids, has vitamin E, vitamin K, have couple of other different interesting class of substances, which can do right job dealing with abnormal pathogenic bacteria and create right environment for right enzymes, right bacteria. Antibiotics, good when it's acute condition and you must take for a short period of time. Otherwise, you must avoid it, because antibiotics eventually create a lot of distortion in gastric area and help to grow candida.
Okay. Earlier on, you spoke about how, you know, nutrition is of key. Nutrition, how we nourish our bodies. None of us is nourishing our bodies the right way. We aren't getting enough nutrition for, you know, from the various food groups. How do you do that?
But we have enough.
And if you do, you have my absolute respect. Without supplementing, that is.
If we are talking about food itself, I believe it's the biggest science, and we are very ignorant in this area of science because we are following family tradition. We are following country's traditions. We are not following the real understanding which body capable to take what, in what amount, because we are not analyzing and we are not very well educated about what we are putting inside and how we can prevent difficult and different mixtures and how we can learn to clean our system and make sure body doesn't accumulate toxic fragments.
Okay. And what you want to avoid is also to maintain the acidity in the stomach. Am I correct?
It's acidity. Everything in our body, acidity, alkaline balance. If you get rid of acidity, you make yourself completely ill because you can absorb many protein fragments and many other food. Question is how to achieve right balance. If you feel discomfort from acidic products, you must avoid them. Or at least if you can't avoid them, you must decrease the amount.
Okay.
Or try to find out which product is acidic and which product create acidity in your system.
Right. So every individual is different, and that's what
yes.
we need to listen to our bodies. Joe wants to know, will drinking alkaline water help to balance the pH level inside?
If you are talking about alkaline water, we must understand what for. Because many countries, they have their springs, we have alkaline or acidic water, depends on the condition. If you will continue always sit on alkaline water, I don't think we will help body too much because eventually we will have problem how to digest proteins.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you wouldn't recommend it then?
I'm not in a position. And also, if you are talking about alkaline water, we have two varieties of alkaline water. Alkaline water which rich of electrolytes like sodium hydroxide or potassium hydroxide, or we have alkaline water as a result of electrolysis water, we are getting alkaline water and acidic water.
Okay.
Acidic water becoming mainly for treatment severe condition and have antibacterial property. Alkaline water enhances a couple of things which could be alkalinity, toxic fragments.
Right. What if I just want to drink more normal water? To be honest, I don't even know whether the water I'm drinking is towards alkaline or whether it's more acidic.
No, problem is water has pH 7.
It's
a neutral.
Yes.
And we are talking about alkalinity, but we are not talking about minerals or excess mineral content in the water. If pH is 7, it's 7.
Mm-hmm.
It means we already have some balance between different type of anions, chlorine or CO3, carbon or different type of anions. But to drink water, neutral water, it's the right things for the body. But if body already shifted in pH towards alkalinity or towards acidity, we must address it.
Okay. And another thing that, you know, H. pylori could be associated to is enema. Could you just shed more light on that? How so?
H. pylori associated to
anemia.
Anemia. It's definitely yes, because H. pylori itself destroys mucus lining. And iron absorption, when we are increasing, decreasing, because H. pylori has capacity to produce products which decrease so-called acidity, in this case, absorption of iron becoming poor. And especially with latest development, finding one of the strain of H. pylori in the liver, it can also inhibit accumulation of iron, an iron like a bonding element, which is carrier of the oxygen, and altogether hemoglobin suffers, and for this reason we are becoming eventually with iron deficiency and anemic in general.
Right, it's a knock-on effect, isn't it? We don't quite see the whole picture.
But major problem of today's medicine, we move to full separation. We believe hand doesn't belong to the body, body belong to the mind, mind doesn't belong to the person.
It came with the world of specialization.
But no, it's a good in some case, but at the same time, if you are trying to make body like different parts which you can mechanically put together, I don't think you will have a human being with right heart, right feeling, or right thoughts.
It cannot be achieved at all. Would a patient need to change their lifestyle to have a proper balance? What would you suggest?
It's a very difficult question. I personally believe people must aware about something which is wrong, to always have spicy food, to always have acidic food, to always be on the side of too much salt in your diet, or try to put one type of diet in the system, one type of food, only spaghetti or only rice. I know, I understand tradition, I know many things, but we must understand we don't have one product which provide you with right nutrient and a different spectrum.
Okay, what is your message? What would you like to leave us with on the subject of H. pylori and its effects on our entire body?
At least I know one thing, H. pylori brought our attention and attention of humanity to real digestion and importance digestion in our life and happiness.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me today. That was Dr. Vagiv Sultanov, gastroenterologist and natural therapies practitioner, on H. pylori and its effects on the body on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.